This podcast is a proud member of the Teach Better Podcast Network. Better today, better tomorrow, and the podcast to get you there. Explore more podcasts at www.teachbetterpodcastnetwork.com. Now let's get on to the episode.
Hello, middle-level educators. Are you looking for a nationwide type of conference at the fraction of the cost? The North Carolina Association for Middle-Level Education welcomes you to Charlotte, North Carolina, March 24th through the 26th for the 2024 NCMLE Inspire Conference. My name is David James, NCMLE Marketing and Conference Director, and I want to personally invite you to our annual conference. You will not want to miss our keynote and featured speakers that lead over 100 middle-level specific teaching and learning sessions. Our featured lineup includes EDU experts from across the country, such as principal and leadership expert Baruti Kafele, Darren Peppard, LaQuanta Nelson, Zach Bauermaster, and the host of this podcast, Mr. Charles Williams. The NCMLE Inspire Conference is for everyone. Go to ncmle.org to register your team for the 2024 NCMLE Inspire Conference today.
Welcome to the Counter Narrative Podcast, a show designed to change the way we talk and think about education. By sharing stories of successes and triumphs, we aim to challenge the dominant narrative that often negatively portrays our disenfranchised populations. I'm your host, Charles Williams, an urban educator for more than 15 years, a current school principal in Chicago, an educational consultant, an equity advocate, and the co-host of Inside the Principal's Office. Let's get started. Hello and welcome back to the Counter Narrative Podcast. As always, thank you so much for hopping back in and rejoining us on these episodes. As I've said all this year, just thank you for the blow up in listenership. I truly appreciate it. And I don't think that this episode is going to be much different. In fact, I know that this is going to be a phenomenal one, one that gains a lot of traction because I am bringing back a guest on the show today, somebody who has been out and about and doing all of these amazing things. Every time I look up, she is just setting the edu world on fire. And extremely jealous because she just had a wonderful birthday gift and one that probably most of us will never, ever be able to have. But I'm going to shoot for it now because I'm like, that is a possibility. So today on the episode, I have the one and the only, the amazing Dr. Sausen Jaber. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thank you. And thank you. I'm humbled by this introduction. You are the one that's out and about doing great and amazing things in different places all the time. So I wouldn't be talking.
Well, you know what? It's a wonderful thing that we get to do this work. I know this episode will drop later than obviously this conversation, but one of the things that I am most excited about is that in just a few days, right, of this recording, not of the episode dropping. So those of you listening, this will have already happened, but we get to meet finally in person, even though we just discovered that we've literally sat in spaces together and didn't realize it.
Absolutely. So exciting. When you created that group, I was like, I didn't know you were going. That's so exciting. And this conference too is going to have a lot of amazing, I call them equity warriors and just great speakers. I love IDEA because it brings family together. So I'm excited. I'm excited that you're going to be a part of it this year.
Yeah. So I've joked because I'm actually not a part of the conference itself. But I was like, you know what? I think that it would be okay if I just kind of like wandered in and they're like, oh, it's, you know, and like, I'm with all the crew. Like you have to let me in. So those of you listening, I hope if you had a chance to go to IdeaCon, hopefully you checked in and saw some of the amazing sessions. I know that you have a few, but I'm really looking forward to jumping into this conversation, right? Because I know that you and I, we spoke, a couple months ago. And I'll be honest, when we first had the conversation, like I spoke to my wife right away and I said, listen, like I want your idea, right? I want your feedback. I said, there's a powerful conversation that I think that needs to be had, right? And I want to do this. I'm wondering what the feedback is. And, you know, she asked me a question. And I think this was one of those moments, like an aha moment, right? And so kudos to my wife. I want to make sure that she gets this credit. But it was like when you do this work, right, this equity work when you're out there, like that's what we're doing, right? We're amplifying the voices of individuals, right? And so would you ever want to stifle that? And I said, you know, absolutely not. So I said, you know, like I want to get my friend on. I want to have this conversation because one, I'm thinking I'm going to learn and grow during this process, but I think it's important to just put it out in the space. And I know that at least from my perspective, it seems that things have shifted a little bit. And I'm just like, you know what? I want this still to be at the forefront. I want conversations to be out there. So I'm excited to jump in. But before we do, like now I'm like, Charles, we didn't even introduce for people who didn't listen to your other episode. So let me pause. People are maybe all excited now, but let me pause for a minute and go ahead, introduce yourself. Let us know who is Dr. Javed. Tell us a little bit about who you are in case somebody's listening to this and they have no idea who you are.
I am a mom of three kids. First, beautiful kids, adult. Two of them are adults. The other one's on her way. She's 17. She just turned 17.
Oh, happy birthday.
Thank you. A daughter of I come from a long lineage of amazing female freedom fighters from Palestine. So I'm Palestinian. And I think today that has a very different meaning than it's ever mm-hmm. had historically, especially in this country. I am an educator of 25 years and I've worn many hats in many different countries. So I consider myself a global educator, and some of my most exciting roles in education, like I gave me the privilege of working with 14 people from 14 different countries to write standards for an entire nation, which was absolutely amazing. Such an enlightening experience. And I feel like I really grew into my leadership in some of those roles. So I've had the privilege of working globally with amazing educators from around the world in a lot of different capacities within my positions and my roles in education. I've done everything from teaching to department chair, curriculum director. And my biggest role was training principals for about 250 schools. And writing standards for the UAE, which was super exciting. Currently, I am an English department chair at Maine West High School. And so it's really exciting that we're doing some things that a lot of schools talk about doing but don't actually do. We're detracking. We're implementing standard-based grading. We're really decolonizing the curriculum. It's taking a lot of work to get everybody's capacity built to actually implement the work and do it with fidelity, but we're doing it and it's looking great so far. And the gains with the kids and the engagement is just absolutely enlightening and feeding the work that we're doing. I do a lot of public speaking, and I feel like that as a Palestinian Muslim American, you don't see many people who look like me in educational spaces at all. And so I've been very intentional about making sure that wherever there's space for me to speak and my voice is honored, that I am in those spaces, normalizing the idea that we have presence and expertise and our lived experiences and our identities are valid beyond the single stereotypes that most people see on television. Mm-hmm. And I try to bring my authentic self and intersectionality into a lot of the work that we're doing in those spaces. And so keynote speaking, I do a lot of curriculum work with districts. I do a lot of consulting, focus sessions with students, affinity spaces for kids, just a lot of different things, whatever equity entails. I've had opportunities to really work on a bunch of different levels and different projects with schools to try to help them bridge gaps and elevate student voice. I've published a couple of chapters this year, which I'm really excited about, and a bunch of journals. And I'm currently working on co-writing a book with Shane Safir, which is part two of Street Data, which is probably, this is me, like another Cornel West moment, where like I think Shane Safir's book is probably the best professional development book written to date for teachers. And I've integrated it into every workshop and all the curriculum work and all the professional development that I do with schools. And so I reached out to her and just said, I am probably your biggest fan. I feel like you should pay me commission for being your walking advertisement. And she was working on her proposal for book two. And I guess we got to know each other. And a lot of the practices that we were working on with like my previous school when I was teaching, and I was taking my students public speaking to a lot of these conferences to talk about their experiences in the class, fit hand in hand with the focus of book two. And so she invited me to write with her, which was like a dream come true. Like I still feel surreal. So yeah, that's probably the most exciting thing that's happened to date with my professional career, because I just absolutely love her work. And I feel like I'm honored that she feels like my work complements her work. And so that's my professional self and a little bit about my personal self, I guess, in a nutshell.
Well, I appreciate you sharing. And so definitely, right? Some amazing things happening. And nothing to overshadow any of those things. I love the fact that you said, like, let's normalize this, right? I think so many times when we're in spaces, people are like, oh, that's so amazing, right? That you get to do this thing. And you're like, well, yeah, but like, let's do it so often and so many that it just becomes normalized, right? Not to diminish, but let's normalize these opportunities. And so I love the fact that you said that. So I know what we're going to talk about, because you and I have already kind of started that conversation, but I don't want to leave the listeners behind. So I want to make sure that they are getting caught up here. So I'll kick things off with the question I always ask, and then we'll launch into this. So let's talk a little bit. Like, why are we here tonight? What is it that we're talking about exactly?
Well, I feel like it. I mean, I always say, the things that are happening in the world are symptoms of a disease that the world has that we fail to acknowledge as human beings. And I think what we want to talk about is about the importance of reading the world with kids in classrooms, acknowledging current events and lived experiences of students, and being able to really have brave conversations that allow students to interrogate the things that are happening in the world in ways that are real and authentic, beyond the Fox 5 News version of a lot of things that they see. And I think when I reached out to you, I said, can we have a conversation about Palestine and about a lot of schools that are refusing to engage in this conversation because they've politicized, it's too political or it's too complex, are the reasons that they continuously give for not wanting to engage in this conversation. And like, here we are at a point now where it's day 122 of this genocide. The death toll is at 32,000 people. The World Health Organization estimates that it's probably closer to 100,000 people with the bodies that are under the rubble. They are hungry, they are cold, they are starving, and our country is funding it and very unequivocally supporting it. And so, like, how do we not have this conversation in schools when our tax dollars, just another, $14.7 billion was approved yesterday, are continuously being funneled into Palestine, into Israel, for this very purpose? And so, and this is another example, right? Like, I guess like we can look back at history and see that there is and has always been this theme of let's brush it under the rug and let's act like it's not happening and hopefully it will just go away in schools. We never really talk about these things, which is why I've been saying we've been here before, right? As a country, we've been here before as a nation. We've been here with the Native Americans. We've been here with our Black community. We've been here with Japanese after, you know, with the internment camps. We've been here with our southern border. We've been here before. And we will be here again if we don't learn and teach our kids to do better by engaging in critical conversations about what's really happening here and why we keep coming back here. And what's our role if we're going to be global citizens? What's our role going to be if we're actually going to be change agents? Like, I feel like we have tokenized these words. We throw them around. We throw around words like belonging. We throw around words like inclusion. But then we politicize kids' identities in schools. And then we don't want them to belong and we don't want them to feel included. And so we really need to pick a lane. American public schools need to pick a lane and need to decide, like, what is our equity stance? What's our equity identity? Are we really about this work, or are we just performatively about this work? And if we are really about this work, then we need to be about this work. And that means that we can't shy away from these conversations, regardless of what side we stand, right? And kids should have the opportunity to engage in these conversations authentically, especially when they're experiencing it firsthand through social media and on the news. Acting like this is not happening in our world almost feels like we are teaching them to be desensitized and not care. And then we get mad when they're desensitized and they don't care. We talk about we want to teach them empathy, but we're asking them not to have conversations when they should be exercising empathy. And so it feels like do as I say, not as I do. And it feels like we are talking about preparedness for a post K-12 world, but we're not doing the things that we need to do to really prepare kids to be global citizens and learn how to engage in a world that they can make better, as opposed to them continuing to break and hurt the way we have been. We have been operating, and we're operating in a very broken, very scary world, especially in the United States, where we have so much hate that we're the only country in the world that has school shootings. And that is born out of this kind of idea that we can hate and we can act on hate. Mass shootings everywhere. The hate crimes are on the rise like never before. And we can name political presidents that have contributed to that in some very real ways. The censorship that's happening in our communities is only othering and alienating groups of people even more. And then world events exasperate that, and it's like the icing on the cake. And everything becomes taboo to talk about, and we want kids to learn about similes and metaphors, and guess what? They don't care. So I feel like that there's a lot to unpack there, but that's what we're going to talk about.
No, I appreciate it. I think one of the things, right, when you reached out and we started having this conversation, you know, one, and I think I've already mentioned this, you know, I knew that I was coming into a conversation to say, look, I don't have a lot of information, right? And I think that comes from some of what you were just mentioning, is that, you know, lack of information, lack of, I think, exposure on multiple fronts, a lack of space to have real and honest conversations without somehow becoming polarized or politicized. And, you know, I had a lot of questions, right? When everything started, I had a lot of questions. And then I think what bothered me was something that you shared, was that this idea that within our school systems, right? I'm preparing a keynote right now. I get to speak to a group of Illinois EL teachers next week. I'm their keynote. And as I was diving into some of the data around it, the second largest language spoken in Illinois outside of Spanish is Arabic. Mm-hmm. And so we have this very large population of students. And yet you shared with me that not just in general, it wasn't like a school or a teacher, right? But like that there was this campaign throughout the state where these letters went out supporting one side of this situation. And like, how does that impact students in that space to say, wait a minute, like my family is being impacted. My family, you know, as we were just mentioning, right? Unfortunately, you know, being murdered, right? And you're essentially saying like these things are acceptable. Like what does that say about me as a person?
Right.
And when you shared that with me, because those letters did not make their way, at least I will say, into our part of the city. I won't say they didn't go anywhere within Chicago, but on the west side of Chicago, those were not there. And so when you shared that with me, I was appalled. I was bothered. And I said, this conversation has to be had, right? This idea, as you were talking about, of our students, one, needing to be able to have a space where they're having very honest conversations, they're exploring, they're discussing what's happening in the world, right? Being able to develop this sense of empathy, but also for us to recognize that as we're discussing diversity and equity within our spaces, when we have groups of students and we create policies or we take action that says, in this moment, you are less than, right? Like, what are we telling an entire group of students? And you're right. This is not the first time this has happened in our country. And that bothered me. And that's one of the reasons I said, we need to bring this to the forefront. Because if this is happening, and any of the listeners who are listening to this episode, if this is happening within your space, like, I want us to be able to address it. And hopefully by the end, right, we'll be able to have some ideas about, like, well, what can we do? How can we move forward? So I guess my question for you is, like, how in the world is this even acceptable? Like, why is this happening? And not just within a larger scheme, right? Not just in the country as a whole, but within our classrooms, within our schools, which are supposed to be, right, these non-politicized, non-polarized places, but we're seeing more and more often that is absolutely not the case.
It's quite the opposite, right? It's quite the opposite. So I think there's a couple of things. First, to contextualize, this is the largest Arab community in the country. It's the largest Palestinian community in the country, statistically. Mm-hmm. We surpassed Michigan last year. Michigan had the largest population, and we surpassed them in Illinois this year.
Okay.
With our growing numbers of Syrian refugees and Yemeni refugees, so we have the largest population of Arabs in the country. And so to think that, yes, schools issued letters in support of Israel. And it's really interesting because at the end of the day, like, we are watching a humanitarian crisis unfold in front of our very eyes. The genocide in Gaza is the most live streamed genocide historically because of social media. And that is why, for the first time since the occupation of Palestine in 1948, people are getting a glimpse into what's actually happening in that region versus the idea that, you know, it's the lion, it's the African proverb of the lion and the hunter, right? We always hear the story of the hunter. We never hear the story of the lion because the hunter is the one with the weapon, and so he's more powerful. Well, the story always lies with the one who holds the power. We know this already. Mm-hmm. And historically, Palestinians have not had the power. And so their actual narrative has also been stolen from them, along with their land and along with their livelihood and their culture and the appropriation of their culture and everything else. And so we have never had the opportunity to listen to the Palestinian side. And as a country that unequivocally and bipartisan supports Israel with our financial dollars and our political backing, without questioning it, and our schools are complicit with only teaching a single story narrative that supports the Israeli narrative, right? Then where are people going to have sympathy and empathy for identity of people that they don't even understand? They don't even know anything about us, besides what's on the news and besides what they hear on television, which is all criminalizing and dehumanizing the people. And so to many Americans up until this point, everything that was happening in the region was deserved because we've done such a good job dehumanizing, just like we have dehumanized our Black young men. And that's why when we see police brutality, people don't react, right? Because he must have done something wrong, because he's violent, because he's all of these stereotypes. So we don't react anymore. We're desensitized to it. And that's what's happening in Palestine. But their streaming of their own trauma and putting it on display, I mean, whether it's the father, when the hospital was bombed, that walked out of the hospital with the remains of his children in two shopping bags because he picked them up in pieces. Or yesterday, the Super Bowl, as people were watching the Super Bowl, there was a massacre happening in Rafah, which is where people went for safekeeping. So these are people who've already been displaced with this last aggression and are living in tents that are in close quarters. So every bomb kills thousands of people. And we saw a little girl hanging from a wire with her legs amputated on television. This was happening at the same time as we were counting points in the Super Bowl. And our tax dollars are funding it. And these are things that are being live streamed for the world to watch. So they can no longer dispute what's actually happening here. Mm-hmm. And we're not talking about it, right? And if we want to talk about the largest Palestinian community in the country, and we have teachers and students who aren't allowed to wear anything Palestinian, who aren't allowed to talk about Palestine. And, you know, I don't know if people know, like, if you're Palestinian and you grew up in a Palestinian home, if you come from refugee backgrounds, regardless of where they come from, these are people who were forced, it's forced displacement. So oftentimes, and this is research, if you look into refugee families, they tend to hold on closer to their culture. They tend to hold on closer to their language because it's all they have left. And so if you grew up as a Palestinian American, you grew up in a very Palestinian home, the likelihood is in America, you grew up listening to Palestinian music, you grew up watching news on television about what's happening in the region. We were glued to our TV screens growing up. If there was a genocide or a war or killings that were happening, we weren't allowed to watch anything else or listen to music. We were mourning. We were grieving. The trauma was there. We felt it. We experienced it. We watched the bodies being pulled on Arab news channels. Oh, that's what we grew up watching. And as a daughter of refugees, my family, my grandfather was displaced. And then my parents who grew up in UNRWA tents were displaced again. And then we ended up here. Like, this is a family that the occupation of Palestine, it has affected us in every possible way and affected who we are as people in this country in every possible way. Every person that dies in Palestine is a tragedy that we feel. And so, like, thinking about how do we want kids to show up in school today when thousands, tens of thousands, and 100,000 estimated have been killed, and an entire area has been absolutely decimated, and we're not acknowledging the humanity of these people to say enough, like, let's not even talk about politics. Right? Let's not talk about who belongs where, who the land belongs to, or whatever. Children are dying. Children are starving. There's a new code for children who are the only survivors of their families. And they're estimating that there's about 25,000 of them. We're not even talking about injuries and grave injuries that people have legs amputated or arms amputated or have lost their eyes, who are still alive and are not even being counted. We're not talking about the social emotional decay of the people who have been undergoing live bombing and watching their families being picked in pieces for the last 120 days, who have been asked to move to one area of Gaza and then bombed. Hospitals have been targeted. Babies in incubators have been left to rot in their beds. And we've seen footage of all of this. The whole world has. And we're still saying no humanitarian aid. We're still saying we're going to continue funding it. We're still saying we want our kids to show up in school and care about similes and metaphors and everything else when they really don't. I have, as an adult, found it so difficult to feel functional in any capacity while all of this is happening. I feel like I have band-aided myself for the last 120 days, listening to conversations that feel so petty and so insignificant in comparison. And I feel so helpless and I feel so conflicted because my tax dollars are killing my people. And that's the survivor's guilt that so many of our kids are feeling. And so when we have schools saying we support this, you're literally saying that you do not value the livelihood and humanity of the Palestinian children that you teach. That's what that statement says. When you say we're not going to stop and pause and think about the trauma-informed practices that Palestinian kids in the community needs right now and the social emotional support that they need right now, you don't care about those kids. You don't care about what they're experiencing. When you're not saying, let us have a critical conversation to help create community because kids are calling and saying the meanest things to Palestinian students because of their lack of understanding and knowledge. And teachers, the macroaggressions are happening day after day, in addition to having to process the trauma of what's happening in the world already. You don't care about these kids. You don't care if they ever belong. When you tell a student, you assign a project and you tell students pick a country and kids pick Palestine and you say, you can't do Palestine because Palestine's not a country. You're literally telling these kids that you have no home and no identity. You're negating their existence. And then we want to sit here and talk about inclusion and belonging. I am so frustrated and tired with our one-sided, superficial, performative listing and checklisting of what equity in schools looks like. And a lot of the times, Charles, it's the teachers that are the perpetuators, that are perpetuating harm on kids with their lack of understanding and knowledge. So if anybody here is listening, my message to every listener, go do the work. it's no longer something that we can sit here and we have the luxury of considering whether we should or shouldn't do this work. Our world, the health of our world, requires us to do this work. Schools have to function as healing spaces. Our work has to be heart work. And we can't pick and choose when to turn that on and when to turn that off. It's a state of being. We either are or we're not. There's no middle ground. We can't unequivocally support the Ukraine and call what they experienced horrific and call it a war and call them victims and watch what's happening in Palestine today and say it is justified. We can't start the conversation about Palestine on October 7th. Gaza is a part of a country that has been besieged for 15 years. No one can go in and no one can go out. Are they not entitled to fight back an occupation that has literally kept them in an open air jail for 15 years? We keep blaming Hamas. Hamas came to existence in 1987. This genocide and this occupation started in 1948. My entire village was massacred in 1948 before Hamas. Let's start the conversation there. We want to talk about Hamas being the one to blame for all of this. What's happening in the West Bank where Palestinians are also being killed by the hundreds? There's no Hamas there. We need to do the work of understanding these things. And yes, it's for everybody who says, why should we care? It's the other side of the world. I was in Kansas last weekend and I saw a lady pushing a shopping cart with two of her children in it. And it was freezing outside. And the only thing I could think to myself is like, why isn't our money here at home? Why isn't there an uproar and like so much like people not, why are people not fighting? I went to Maryland. The amount, the number of streets with homes that have been abandoned because people couldn't pay their mortgage. California, literally shanty towns under the bridges of cardboard homes. How many Americans don't have money for medical insurance? How many Americans can't put their kids through colleges? How many people are losing their homes? How many people can't get proper medical treatment because we can't get coverage for certain procedures that need to be done? How many people have college loans? Why is our money being funneled into another country and we're not even asking questions about where it's going or why it's going there when we need it so desperately here at home? I just don't understand. It's Angela Davis said, she said progressive except for Palestine. She called them PEPs in her book, Freedom is a Constant Struggle from Ferguson to Palestine. She talks about how American the Palestinian issue is and the intersectionality between the Black Lives Matter movement and Palestine, because we're all connected, right? All of these marginalized communities are connected, but we've been taught to silo ourselves and look the other way if it doesn't look like us. And that's a really big part of the problem. So if you're a marginalized community and you're listening, it's about time that we come out of our silos and we collaborate for justice for all of us, because our world needs it. And that's what we should be teaching our kids, right? Injustice anywhere is a threat to justice everywhere. That's our forefathers. Those are the ones that we want to be looking at. That's what we ingrain as our American identity when we talk about the ethos of our country. It's that. But where are we integrating that and really thinking about it with authenticity and fidelity in schools? We're not. We absolutely are not.
So I think for one of the very first times, as I'm sitting here listening to you, you know, oftentimes during these conversations, I find a space to say, like, let's expound on that. Let me share, and for one of the rare moments here, there isn't much. I before I share anything, I think, first of all, I just want to say thank you, which I know I normally do at the very, very end of the conversation, but just thank you for being so open and honest and vulnerable and transparent as you're sharing with us. I think we sit in a space where this conversation can quickly become a space of, I'm going to use it to weaponize. And what I'm hearing from you is this pleading of us as humans for humanity, this idea that we tend to other. And so when we sit in that space, I'll be honest, this morning as I was watching the news, and you just mentioned, right, Ukraine and Russia, and literally the first thought that popped into my head when I saw it pop into the news was, I forgot about that. It doesn't mean it stopped. It didn't mean it went away. It didn't mean that this pain and suffering has ceased. And I remember when I first, when all of those things were first happening, and I kept asking myself, we're spending a lot of time having certain conversations, and yet this isn't the only place this is happening, right? These sorts of things are happening in multiple places across the world. And I know that there are people here who are being impacted by that. And yet we ignore it because, right, we have no direct ties as a country, I guess. But we ignore it. We other it. We pretend like it doesn't matter. And the idea that this has happened over and over and over, the idea that we tend to so often and so quickly forget about these things. It's bothersome. And I can only hope that people who are listening to this conversation, if you were in a space where these words are resonating, and not just simply because you are agreeing with Sausen, but to say, you know what, I too am guilty of this, right? I too am guilty of dehumanizing, of othering, of not providing space to have these conversations, right? Of not looking into my role and how when I stand silent, right, I'm leaning into this, right? We've had these conversations more and more often that you don't get to remain neutral. That is not a space. I know it feels oftentimes as a safe space that, okay, I'm not going to get involved. But what we know, and we're so quickly to point out in some spaces that, you know, then you are contributing to, right? That your passiveness is permission. And if that is true in one space, then it is true in others. And I'm hoping that there are individuals who may be listening to this who are having those moments, those quiet moments of reflection right now. Because as I said at the beginning of this, that's where I was, right? When you first reached out to me, there was a part of me, and this is just, again, me being honest, that I was like, I don't know if I want to touch this one, right? And as I reflected, as I spoke to I said, Charles, like, who are you to deny that? Who are you to get to say that one issue is more important than another? Absolutely not. And so I just, again, just want to say thank you for sharing. Thank you for being so transparent and honest. And I'm just curious, as we're having this conversation, clearly this is an issue, right? This is an issue on multiple levels within our spaces because these are our students who are being impacted in one way or another by this. And we need to provide those spaces. We need to have real and honest conversations. We cannot shy away from this. This is the world. This is what they are seeing. They have access to all of this, whether or not we share it with them. And as you mentioned, with this promotion of social media, like there's no way to escape this. There's no way to pretend otherwise.
You know, Charles, here's the thing. I feel like I always think, like, my oldest daughter is 26 years old and she got married a few years ago. And, you know, they've been talking lately about maybe considering starting a family and whatever. And so, like, I thought to myself, years from now, when my grandchild is old enough to have a conversation and they ask me, like, what did you do in this time when the genocide was happening? I want to be able to say, what did you do when George Floyd was being killed? What did you do when children and families were being separated and they were being put in cages on our southern border? What did you do? I want my grandkids to be proud of me. I want to be able to say that I did the right thing, that I did everything I could within my locus of control as a human being, as a community member, as an American, right? As a teacher, as an equity advocate, that with every single one of those hats that I wore, that I did everything I could within my locus of control to do the right thing and support those people. It is a domino effect. We are ignorant if we think that what happened with George Floyd didn't impact all of us and impact all of our communities. We are ignorant if we think that allowing our government to put people in cages and separate families, children from their parents, wasn't going to affect us in different ways. We are ignorant when we think censoring certain narratives and taking things out of curriculum and not allowing books to be taught in certain schools isn't going to have a domino effect, and it's not going to trickle down and impact us in other places as well. We are ignorant if we think that these things are silos and that they're not going to spread and hurt every single human here. I hate to use the argument of interest convergence when we talk about equity. But for the first time, I feel like we really need to open our eyes, because we are in danger if we don't see the interest convergence. Every American, the value of and importance of and urgency of us doing the work that needs to happen to heal all of these things. Because if hate begets anything, it's more hate. If violence begets anything, it's more violence. And we are coming to another election where already in the primary, just the conversations that are happening by our president-elects or people who want to run are all rooted in hate. We're a country that uses hate to make people run to the ballots. That has been the case since the inception of our country. We have elevated hate and fear in order to bring people to the ballots. And we already know what fear does. When you're making decisions out of a place of fear, which is what's happening when police pull over Black men, which is what's happening when we are saying, yes, let's send more money and kill all those terrorists because Israel has a right to defend itself. A colonizer has a right to defend itself. Let's learn history beyond the history that is in the history books in our schools, because we already know that when the civil rights movement was happening, and even today, how many Americans only learned about Juneteenth last year when it became a national holiday? Mm-hmm. Our history books are giving us a one-sided history. They have never told the truth. Why do we still believe that in these cases they have told us the truth, or they tell us the truth? And every teacher is socialized by an education, if she or he grew up in this country, the same education where there are gaps. It is a duty of every teacher to do the work to find a truth. And if you don't know, it's because you choose not to know at this point, because social media and everything else, there's resources, there are books, there are plenty of books and novels now that are on the topic that will teach you. And if in the last 4 months you haven't picked something up to educate yourself, shame on you. Your tax dollars are funding it. Our blood, their blood is on our hands, on my hands, on your hands, Charles. Every single one of us. Our mayor in one of the largest Palestinian communities told us to go back to our country. Mm-hmm. Last week, our mayor said our American education wasn't evident. Why? Because we asked him to call for a ceasefire resolution. He said Palestinians in this community, one of the trustees said Palestinians in this community should try to engage with the American experiment. So we're not American. This is our mayor. And he has, since the village hall meeting, gone on a rant on social media, literally dividing the Orland Park community. And so we have people who are supporting him and people who are speaking against him. Is this not inciting hate in our community? Mm-hmm. Just 4 months ago, 6-year-old Wadir was stabbed 26 times for being Palestinian in Plainfield, Illinois. The hate crimes are on the rise. 3 young men were shot for wearing keffiyehs in Vermont. A woman was run over in another state. A girl was literally physically attacked in a school last week. And it went viral. And these are the stories that we know because they're extreme. They ended up with death or somebody being physically hurt or somebody being paralyzed. They're extreme stories. But these aggressions are happening every single day in schools. Every single day. Hate is on the rise. And what does that lead to? Are we waiting for something bigger to happen and then we're going to sit there and react it again? And demonize and criminalize, or I worry all the time that my son, somebody's going to say something to him, or my daughter, somebody's going to say something to her, and then she's going to react, and then she's going to be the bad person because she reacted to something somebody said because her district adamantly refuses to have a community town hall or to do some critical conversations about cultural sensitivity. Let's understand the lived experience of the Palestinian students that exist in large numbers. 40% of our school district is Palestinian. Let's elevate some of their stories so we can try to equalize the playing field. If you're watching American news, you're not seeing what's really happening. Follow Nour Irakat. Follow Mohammed Al-Kurd. Follow Mu'taz. Follow the reporters that are on the ground that are being literally killed every single day because they don't want the truth to come out. They don't want people to know the truth. And the tides are changing. There are international protests with people by the 100,000s all over the world because people are seeing it. So go look. And it's like one of my students said, if you choose not to look because it's too gruesome, recognize your privilege because we can't turn it off. That's our everyday. That's like somebody saying, you know, can you try not to talk about equity if you're a black or brown person? Like you have the privilege of not being black or brown today. I'm just going to walk into the world and be. Right? We don't have that privilege. We don't. This is our experience. And if you don't want to recognize that by looking at the pictures of what's actually happening there because it's too bloody or too gruesome or too difficult or too political or it's not your problem, that is you turning off your privilege. And you, by doing that, you're using your privilege. And by doing that, you are not acknowledging your complicitness in what's happening here, especially as an American. We are all complicit. If we're not actively working against it, if we're not holding our elected representatives, officials, accountable for calling for a ceasefire, for not using our American dollars anymore to fund this genocide, for humanitarian purposes alone, you don't need to know anything else. You just need to know that there are 20,000 plus children who are now parentless, who are homeless, who have no food, who are in the cold with nothing, who have been under siege for 15 years. 15 years. They have lived in dire conditions. And this is their desperate cry for help. And the world is watching. This genocide is happening on our watch. And we're still trying to decide if we want to say something or not. You know, I think like, I always wondered, you know, like if I was alive for some of these other things, what would I do? And how did people who were alive let these things happen? Well, I guess I'm living it now. I don't have to wonder anymore. I never thought that you could see the things that are coming out of the region today and still feel like you can send a statement home saying we support. Or even worse, an All Lives Matter letter. I can't with those, right? Like we're going to act like both sides are equal here. Because this is a war. This is not a war. Palestine doesn't have an army. Palestine does not have an official government. Palestine does not have resources. Gaza is one of the poorest places in the world. These are people who have literally been beaten down by some of the most sophisticated weaponry. For the last 15 years, they've been bombarded regularly. And they have not been able to rebuild or have food resources or medical resources. We are literally bombing hospitals. Every international law has been broken. Not once, not twice. They continue to be broken. The ICJ ruled this as a genocide. And in response, they are literally massacring people in tents now in an area that was considered and labeled as a safe zone in Rafah. Nobody questioned the $7 million 30-second commercial during the Super Bowl. That's your tax dollars. Nobody questioned that? Nobody questioned why a country needs so much support financially, but they are able to afford a $7 million 30-second commercial during the Super Bowl. The propaganda that's happening is unbelievable. The silencing of pro-Palestinian activists, how many people were fired from their jobs, how many college students were expelled from universities, It's unbelievable. And all of this because we want to preserve a status quo. There are laws now that are penalizing Palestinian people who are pro-Palestinian in certain countries from saying things and from doing things that don't even exist. You can't criticize Israel. You can't say boycott, divest, and sanction when it comes to Israel. But you can boycott and you can criticize the American government in America, but we can't criticize the Israeli government in America without being penalized and without being fired and without worrying that there's going to be deep repercussions. This is a silencing tactic. This is how we make people too afraid. We make sure people are too afraid to speak up and speak out. But educators need to understand that if enough of us are speaking up and speaking out, and if nothing else, you know what? The kids will speak up and speak out. Let's just create space for kids to speak. Let's create space to validate the lived experiences of these students who are eager to feel like they can contribute something to their schools and to their communities, because the guilt that they have for being here. One of my students said, I feel guilty eating. I feel guilty sleeping in a bed. I feel guilty coming home to my parents. I feel guilty coming to school and sitting in a desk. I can't sleep. I can't eat. I can't do anything. I feel guilty because I think about the kids in Gaza and I think that they don't have beds and they don't have food and they have no school. They haven't had school. There's no schools for them to go back to if this war ended, if this genocide stops today. They're not going to be able to rebuild. The schools have been destroyed. The mosques have been destroyed. There's one building of a hospital that has no resources. And all you need to do is look at Jazeera. All you need to do is follow a journalist from Gaza and see exactly what's happening there. And you should, because that narrative is really different than the narrative that you're seeing on your news and the narrative that you're listening to in your schools and the narrative that's in your social studies curriculum. And just ask yourself, where does Palestine show up in your curriculum? Where does Palestine show up in your curriculum? Where does Islam show up in your curriculum? Who knows the difference between a Muslim and an Arab? How many of us conflate those identities? Because we're supposed to create schools that have a culture of belonging, but at the end of the day, we don't even know who the kids that we serve are. How can we ever ensure that they belong? How do we even start to meet the needs of kids that we don't understand or we don't really give them a chance to be who they are? Those are all questions that our kids have been asking. You want me to belong? How am I going to belong when you literally are negating my very identity?
So I want to ask, as we're having this conversation about, and I know you've dropped some things here and there as we're going throughout, that if I'm an educator, whether that's a teacher in a classroom, whether that is a building principal, whether that's a district leader, whatever it may be, if I'm an educator, period, what are some things that I can do right now to make some of these shifts? I hear you, right, calling out the hypocrisy of our practices when we talk about these inclusive spaces, when we like to use the word equity in every other sentence or in every other program that we have. And yet it only matters, right, when you're part of the group that matters. So I don't think anybody listening to this right now can have a thread of, you know, absolute, I don't even know the word to say, this idea of saying, you know what, I'm not complicit, right? We've all played some sort of role in whether the fact that we were too afraid or too ashamed or we didn't do or whatever it might be. Earlier, you threw out that concept of like, when I'm asked, what did I do? How am I going to respond to that question? And right now, I want for us to be able to provide the listeners here, here's something that you can do, right? That you cannot turn off this episode, that you cannot walk away from this conversation and say, I was moved, I heard, I wanted to, but I didn't know what to do, right? And because of that, I shrank back into my space of comfort, of being ignorant, of not saying, look, I'm not going, right? Leaning into that privilege of saying, I get to ignore. Nobody is going to be able to walk away from this space and be able to say that. So what can someone do? Are there any practical spaces? I know you drop them throughout, but can we highlight a few of those things right now that someone can do to begin really leaning into this?
There's so much that can be done, right? Begin your own education if you don't know. And let's try to diversify our sources, right? Let's seek sources that maybe we would not have thought about seeking before, right? So, and I can share with you some, if you're on social media, there are reporters, there are accounts, there are, Noura Irakat is a Palestinian human rights lawyer, an American Palestinian human rights lawyer, who is absolutely amazing and has been working for Palestinian liberation and commenting on Palestinian liberation and talking about the international laws that have been broken over the last 75 years, but especially in the last aggression. These are all people that you can learn from in quick time. There are tons of books, 100 Years of War in Palestine by Khaled Rashidi. We'll give you the other perspective. If you're a person who loves to read novels, They Called Me Lioness is a historical account of contemporary, I'm not a historical account, contemporary Palestine, but rooted in a historical understanding of what, how we got to where we are today. Mornings in Jenin is another one, a great novel. I feel like it traces my family's displacement in history from 1948 to a family that ends up in the United States. There's so many great resources and books. For your students, make space, validate their stories. If you're in a building that has few, more than one Palestinian student, have an affinity space for them. Let them at least be in community with each other and feel like there is a space where they can talk about the way they feel and talk about the things that who they are, what they're feeling, all of these different things in a way that is meaningful without having to explain to people who they are or why they feel the way they feel or contextualizing or talking about the history. They can just be, because so many of our kids have no place to belong right now. Nobody gets it. Nobody's going to get it no matter how much they read. They get each other, right? And if you don't have a Palestinian teacher, let's find the resources within our community. What parent can help facilitate? What community members, what organizations, American Muslims for Palestine has an entire curriculum for schools about Palestine. Let's lean in on organizations that have been doing this work for a really long time that we've never recognized as valid. They have speakers that will come out to your school and speak to you, to speak to your parents, speak to your teachers. Let's give teachers the opportunity to, if you're an administrator, to engage in a conversation that might give them a different perspective, right? I'm not, I never said we should immerse kids in one idea or another. They should have access to these different perspectives and they should be able, we have to give them the skills to find their own truth. But when we only give them one-sided stories, that's all they're gonna know, right? We talk about mirrors and windows. By not creating accurate mirrors for certain kids, those become the windows for other kids. That's all they know. So there's so much that can be done. Immerse yourself in a different perspective, one that you never considered to be valid because that's what you were taught. Challenge your own beliefs. There's enough out there for people to see that there is a different story that is a valid one. That's where we all have to start. Watch Jazeera. That's literally live streaming Gaza in real time, right? Watch a different news from a different country. We already know that our news is one-sided. It's always been, right? Let's challenge our own beliefs. That's where we have to start. I can't ask teachers to go and do this work with kids and perpetuate harm. Whenever we talk about equity work, it starts with yourself. You can't start to have these conversations unless you do the work on your own. But at least create space for people to have conversations in schools and feel validated. Check in with your Palestinian students. Work with your counselors and with your social workers. They need that support. Let's think about trauma-informed practices and how we can support them. Maybe we need to do more journaling and give them space to talk about how they're feeling that day and grace when they're not feeling okay. Like, I am pretty sure that many Palestinian kids watching the images that emerged on the night of the Super Bowl were not okay the next day. I was not okay. It was hard to feel okay. It was hard to hear people having conversations about football when you knew that there was a massacre that killed so many the night. I'm sorry. The night before. It's really hard to feel like any of that matters.
So I'm going to name, I guess, maybe a feeling or an emotion, right? That I'm guessing that many people are feeling right now, because I know that I am.
Sorry.
And it's the idea of, or the feeling of shame. And I think that shame can be a very powerful thing. So I'm sorry. I was just losing my internet connection here. But I'm going to re-say this, that I feel that we're having this feeling of shame. And the other day, a colleague of mine stated something I think that was powerful, of this idea of reframe the shame. And I think so oftentimes when we feel this shame, we feel guilty, we tend to then pull back. But I would challenge you to listen to these words. If you need to go back, I'm going to drop these resources in the show notes, but go back, you know, hit that little back button, rewind, go back, listen to this. And use that shame as a space to say, I'm going to lean in. I'm going to lean into the discomfort. I'm going to do the work that needs to be done, because this is that time, right? And if you can honestly walk away and say, I'm okay not doing, I'm okay with the way that things are, then don't reframe that shame, right? Shame on you, right? Like I don't know of anybody to be able to do that. And so I just want to say again, like, you know, thank you for coming into this space and having a very, very honest conversation. I did not know where this was going to go. I did not know what was going to stem. I said at the very beginning that I wanted to enter into this space to be able to learn. And you've shared so much with me and the notes that I have taken, so that way I can continue to learn and to grow. And so on a very personal note, I want to say thank you for providing me with space and opportunity to be able to do that. Thank you for coming here and sharing your story and sharing these very real truths. This idea of saying, I'm not purporting one over the other, but if we're going to have these conversations, then we need to understand that there are multiple perspectives and that we need to be able to develop those truths and not just accept what is being fed to us. Thank you for doing the work that you're doing within schools. So I just thank you overall. So I just want to say thank you, thank you, thank you.
Thank you, Charles, for, you know, so many people have platforms, and I keep saying, like, I am about equity for all kids, right? Like, my work for the last 10 years speaks to that. But I feel like whenever I post about Palestine or talk about Palestine, I get crickets on social media. Nobody wants to engage. Nobody wants to interact. There's just silence. And we have become too comfortable in our silence. And I hope people are uncomfortable. I want you to be uncomfortable, because discomfort equals growth. And whenever my students walk into a classroom at the beginning of the year, I tell them, be prepared to be very uncomfortable, because we are going to grow, because I love you enough to make you uncomfortable enough to grow. That's what this is about, right? It's bell hooks, radical love. If we love our country, this is how we love our country. We want our country to be great. This is how we make our country great. It's by acknowledging the people that are here. We're here. We're here in large numbers. We are taxpayers. We are doctors, and we are lawyers, and we are teachers, and we are Uber drivers, and we are grocery store owners. We are here. And we have contributed to this country just like every other group of people. And there are many of us here. And so we're a part of this community, whether people want to accept us or not. So why don't we make it a loving community? Why don't we make this country really great and redefine what that statement means? We are capable. There's no reason for us not to. Because if we stay silent now, the question that I keep asking is, like, who's next and what does it look like? Because it will happen again to another group of people. Again, we've been here before. Who's to say that it's not going to happen again? Right? This is the way this country was built on the carcasses of the Native Americans. We are a colonizer. We are not going to call out another colonizer. Let's understand the politics, like, really understand the connections here. And understand our role in that, when we are cultivating the future of tomorrow by shaping what kids know and don't know, by allowing them to talk about things and not allowing them to talk about other things. We're making decisions. For everybody who thinks this is too political, you're being political by being a gatekeeper and not allowing these conversations to happen in class. That is political. And our country and our world just can't afford it. It can't afford the censorship. It can't afford this hate. And we fear, we hate what we fear. Hate comes from not understanding, right? So the only way to alleviate hate and to cure it is by understanding, by educating ourselves, by creating spaces where people can authentically interact with each other in schools and love each other. That community, that authentic, real community that's built on understanding and love is what's going to transform our country and make it great, is what's going to stop these mass shootings that are rooted in hate and not understanding and stereotypes and single stories that are perpetuated by elected officials and school curriculum and the media and the news that are all working to divide and conquer the people here. We have to be aware of that, and we have to be willing to have these conversations. And you may make mistakes, and that's okay, right? At least you are making the effort to get better at it. And I will also say, follow me. We did a two-part special with Ijeoma Olu, Joe Truss, and Shane Safir and myself on Palestine 101. And then we're coming up with part two in the next few weeks about how to engage in critical conversations. It's going to be a series. We'll have students on the third segment, artists on the fourth. So it'll be a segment that keeps coming. I post resources all the time. My family generated a nice amount of money so that we can create teacher packages and mail them out. So I mailed out 500 teacher packages. I have about 60 or 70 more in my house that I'm happy to mail. So if you're interested in receiving an educational package with books and resources that are yours, as long as you're just paid forward when you're done with them, pass them on to another educator, email me, educationunfiltered@gmail.com, or send me a message on social media. I have, I think, 65 more boxes that I am happy to mail to people who want to do the work. And you don't have to do anything but pay it forward. Use what you learn to benefit an educational space, to create space, to pass your information as an educator. Because when you educate a teacher, you educate an entire village. We are the most powerful people in the world. It's not the presidents and the elected officials, it's teachers. Because every president, every doctor sat in a classroom first. We are the place where those hearts and those minds get shaped and formed. So let's recognize our power and recognize our ability to be able to really contribute to a future. I don't want my grandkids to be born into this world. I worry for them. I worry for where we're going. It scares me so much. I thank God every day that my children are adults or almost adults, but I worry so much about the future of what we're leaving behind and how broken it is. So let's start taking those moves in the right direction. And one person at a time, one move at a time, it will make a difference. And I'm not saying this like kumbaya. I really believe in the power of education. This is why I do everything that I do. This is why I speak in so many places. This is why I do keynotes and public speaking, because I know that schools are healing spaces and the heart work happens there. It's not going to happen anywhere else. So I think that's a good place to end.
For this conversation.
Yes.
So again, thank you so much. I appreciate you. And I cannot wait for us to connect again.
I'm super excited.
I want to thank you for listening to the Counter Narrative Podcast. If you're enjoying the show, please be sure to like, subscribe, and of course, share it with friends and family. I'd also love to hear your thoughts about the show, so please leave a comment or two as well. Now, I'm not sure what platform you're using, but the show can be found on Anchor, Google Podcast, Apple Podcast, Spotify, and plenty of other platforms. If the show isn't on your preferred site, let me know, and I'll be sure to get it up and running. This podcast is also featured on schoolrubric.com, where you can find educational articles, videos, and interviews with educators from around the globe. Be sure to connect with me and other listeners by following the show on Twitter at the CN Podcast and joining the show's Facebook group. Take care.